You're listening to PetLifeRadio.com.
Is your pet stressed out? Does your pet need annual vaccines? Which pet is best for a child? Would you know if your dog was in pain? Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor, where you'll learn everything about keeping your pet healthy and happy. From pet care, pet meds, and grooming, to pet food, pet insurance, and dental care. This is the place to find out everything there is to know about pet wellness. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile, or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets. Because your pet health matters. Please welcome your pet doctor host, veterinary media consultant, and veterinarian, Dr. Bernadine Cruz.
Pets can have a real taste for danger. Like small children, pets explore their environment by touching, smelling, and virtually putting everything in their mouths. We've all heard of baby-proofing a house, but have you ever thought of pet-proofing your home? My name is Dr. Bernadine Cruz, and we're listening to PetLifeRadio.com and The Pet Doctor Show. Our guest today is Dr. Sharon Gwaltney Brandt, and she is the Vice President of the ASPCA's Poison Control Center, located in Urbana, Illinois. Today we're going to learn ways to safeguard your pet in the house, garage, and even in your yard. We'll be right back after this short break.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
There's nothing like a shaggy dog, baby. They're shagatomic. And this is the place to find out how to have harmony in the household with your pets. Oh, yeah. So stop by our pad every week and get switched on, baby. Switched on to the show that's all about attitude. Oh, behave. With your groovy host, pet edutainer Arden Moore. Yeah, baby, yeah. Every week on demand on PetLifeRadio.com.
Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio with Dr. Bernadine Cruz. The doctor is in and we'll see you now.
Dr. Gwaltney Brandt, thank you so much for being with us today. I know that you sometimes have to man those hotlines there at the Poison Control Center. Can you give us a little bit of background about who you are and how you got into this position at the ASPCA?
Okay, well, thank you for inviting me. I started at the ASPCA as a veterinarian on the phone. My background is I graduated from North Carolina State University with my BVM degree. I practiced for 3 years in small animal practice, and then I went into a pathology residency at Kansas State University. And from there went to a postdoc up at the National Animal Disease Center in Ames, Iowa. And from there I was working on some toxicology issues with pathology and toxicology. And at that point, I spoke with the folks down at the Poison Control Center, and since I'd used their services while I was in practice, I thought it would be an interesting place to go. It was very, very interesting. And they had just been separated from the University of Illinois and acquired by the ASPCA, and the growth potential seemed incredible. So I ended up there, and I'm now the medical director and vice president of the organization.
Now, how long has this Poison Control Center been in existence?
The actual hotline has been in existence. Actually, next year will be our 30th year. The first few years, the Poison Control Center started at the University of Illinois under Dr. Bill Buck, and it basically started out with he and his graduate students just basically carrying beepers, and they would get a call from someone, and they'd get a beep pager, and then they'd call them back. And as word of their expertise and their knowledge spread, it became a kind of a nationwide type thing. And ultimately, the University of Illinois could no longer afford the overhead of many, 24-hour, 7-day-a-week facility for animal poison control calls, and they were in danger in 1995 of shutting down the Poison Control Center. And that's when the ASPCA stepped in and felt that our Animal Poison Control Center worked well with the mission of the ASPCA and they acquired us, and we physically moved away from the university. We are still an allied agent of the university, and we have very close ties with the university, but we're still, right now, a department of the ASPCA.
Now, are there other services like the ASPCA Poison Hotline in the United States, or is this, as I believe it is, the only one of its kind in the United States?
There are a few other animal poison hotlines. We are the only one, though, that is staffed 24 hours a day with veterinary toxicologists and veterinarians who, when you call in, you can get a veterinarian on the phone right there. The others have veterinarians as advisors, but they may not be there, especially if it's like 2 in the morning. And we are the original animal poison control center in the United States.
Why would it not be advisable for, I'm like a cat owner, and all of a sudden I notice that my cat's been chewing on a plant. Why can't I just call my local poison control like I would call if it was my child that was eating something it shouldn't?
Well, the problem is that cats and dogs aren't like children, and many human poison control centers are set up to handle human calls. And while they may be aware of what kinds of problems plants might have for children, they may not be aware of the unique sensitivity of cats or dogs to specific plants. For instance, we know that cats chewing on Easter lilies can have very serious problems, including kidney failure. And that does not occur in dogs. It does not occur in people. It is pretty much uniquely a cat thing. And a human poison control center might not be aware of that unique thing about a dog or a cat.
That's a very good reason then why not to call 911 or your local poison control. Are there any hot zones in the house, for instance? You know, areas where pets just continually, because I'm sure you just get thousands of calls every year of what pets get into. What are some of the common problems, most common problems?
Our most common call that we get is regarding human medications. And the scenarios are most commonly either a bottle is left out, or the cat tries to do in the dog by knocking the bottle off of a counter onto the floor.
I never liked that dog.
Yeah, really. Animals gobble up a dropped pill that someone is, an owner is taking the pill themselves, and they drop it on the floor, and before they can reach down to pick it up, the animal has swallowed it. And depending on what the medication is, it certainly has the potential to be something quite serious. And so medications are our number one call. Other things, though, in the house, there's certainly things like chocolate is a very common call that we get. And we also, this time of year especially, people are putting out mouse poisons and rat poisons because the mice and rats are coming in with the cold weather. Pets can be very, very clever at getting these things out of places that most pet owners think is pretty much a safe spot. There's no way my dog could get under there and get it.
Behind the refrigerator, behind whatever, yes.
Right. They can be very, very clever at getting into those types of things.
Now, why is it, I think this really surprises a lot of people, why is it that dogs and cats are so attracted to the bait? What is put into the bait that makes it attractive to a dog or a cat?
Well, we don't see much of a problem with cats with the bait. Because the bait is actually a grain base. It's designed to attract rodents, and it's a grain based. And dogs, you know, cats are true carnivores. They're not all that interested. They may go over and nibble on a tiny piece of it, and then decide this isn't anything I want. Cats are much more discriminating. Dogs, on the other hand, are more likely to go for it because many of our dogs are fed a grain based dog food, and most dogs, even those that are fed, you know, all meat in their diet, are still not adverse to going out and eating grains because dogs have a little more of an omnivorous nature than cats do.
They eat first, think later.
Right. When we have problems with cats and mouse poisons, it's usually actually often due to the cat eating a mouse that has been poisoned by the mouse poison. And these poisons are very potent, and we can get what they call a relay toxicosis, meaning that the mouse died from the bait, and there's enough of the residue of the bait in the mouse's tissues, and if the cat eats the mouse, we could potentially see a problem.
I know many households have dogs and cats. I had it at the situation where a client came in who had applied a dog flea product to the cat, and the cat started having toxic reactions. And I actually did call the ASPCA hotline and gave me some fantastic information of how to treat it. Do you see that very often?
Yeah, people are trying to save a little bit of money, so they don't want to buy a box of the dog stuff and the box of the cat stuff. And again, just like dogs and cats aren't little kids, cats are not little dogs. And while there are some things we can use on dogs and cats, or give to dogs and cats medicinally that are, you know, not a problem between species, there certainly are things that cats are more sensitive to. We talk about cats being particularly sensitive to a lot of things, and insecticides happen to be one of the things that cats have a unique sensitivity. And the same product that would cause no problem for a 10-pound dog could cause serious problems for a 10-pound cat. And so it's always advisable to read the label and make sure the product is labeled for the species you put it on, because putting a dog product on a cat has the potential to cause some very serious problems. And cats have died from that. And it's a very common scenario that we see during the summer months when people are using a lot of flea control products.
You had mentioned insect control. I live in Southern California and in an area that I think was built on just a huge anthill. And ants are a constant problem. And I want to kill the ants because there are certain things I hate in the world, and ants are one. But I have two indoor cats. I'm very concerned what I use around them for fear of them stepping on it, getting exposed to it. What great ideas do you have for ant control for people that have the huge problem?
Well, I will say that the newer insecticides that have been used in the past 15 years have really become a lot safer than they used to be. 25 years ago, they were using things like organophosphates, which were very toxic not only to the insects but also to mammals at appropriate doses, and certainly to cats who were particularly sensitive to that. Nowadays, we're using much pesticides that are either much milder toxicity to mammals or have very little toxicity to mammals, because they've been developed with against biochemical mechanisms that exist only in the insect and don't really exist so much in us mammals, or somehow they're sequestered in us mammals so that we're not really exposed to it. So I would say you stick with the modern one. Don't use Uncle Harry's 40-year-old pesticide that's sitting at his barn. Buy something new. And especially if you have cats, stick with a pyrethrin. Now, you know, again, we know that cats are very sensitive to concentrated pyrethrins, which are in these spot-on products, and they'll be like 65 or 87% pyrethrin, and cats can be sensitive to that. But the flea sprays that we use on cats and dogs are of 1% or less, and the flea sprays and the roach and ant roach killers that you use around your house are usually less than 1%. Sometimes they're as low as 0.05%. And it's very unlikely you're going to see any toxicosis from that. So I would stick with the more recently developed products and read the label and follow the label exactly, and you shouldn't have too much of a problem. If you have ants outside and you're putting the granular ant bait out, remember that those granules are pieces of corn cob or clay or something like that that are coated with the insecticide, and you're supposed to water those granules, and that washes the insecticide into the soil. And then that way, once that's dried, if your cat or dog should walk across it, they're not really going to be exposed to a significant amount of pesticide.
Some great ideas. We've been talking with Dr. Sharon Gwaltney Brandt of the ASPCA Animal Poison Control Center. They've been giving us some great information on how to safeguard your pets in the house. We'll be right back after the sponsor message.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
Attention passengers, please fasten your seatbelts, put your seat bags and sleeping pets in their full upright position, and prepare for takeoff.
Pet Life Radio presents Travel Tales, the show where you'll get great travel ideas on perfect places for you and your pet. From Paris to paradise, south of the border to the South Seas, Travel Tales will give you cool tips on fun vacation destinations to travel with your pet, pet-friendly hotels, and advice on how to travel safely and happily with your furry best friends. So, get ready to pack the bags and the bones with your Travel Tales hosts, Susan Sims and Nicholas Veslowski, every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.
Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio with Dr. Bernadine Cruz. The doctor is in and will see you now.
Dr. Sharon, thank you so much. You've given us some great ideas of things that I need to be concerned with, like for my own cats, with the insecticides in my ant problem.
You're welcome.
I was very interested. A couple of years ago, I had to do a television program, a segment, about garden safety and those plants that could be toxic. So the camera crew came over, we went outside into my own backyard, and much to my surprise, going, that plant's toxic, that plant's toxic. Oftentimes, we don't think about when we're putting plants in the ground or we have house plants that these can be sources of problems for our pets. What are some of the common landscaping plants that we should try to avoid?
Well, if you have pets, and especially if you have pets who chew on plants, you definitely, and again, this may be there are some species differences, but let's say you have cats. We talked about lilies being dangerous for cats, and that includes daylilies, too. So you might not want to be planting daylilies outside if you have a cat that goes outside and likes to chew on plants. For both species, plants like lily of the valley and foxglove can be very dangerous. Some indoor plants that can be a problem. There's a plant called calancho that's becoming very, very popular as an indoor plant, and it can be very, very dangerous if dogs or cats were to chew on it. Oleander, that's an outdoor plant. It's very common, say, in California area. They really love it out there. And it contains products in it that can cause serious heart abnormalities. And for some reason, dogs and cats tend to like to nibble on the leaves. And a little bit can just cause some mild upset. But if they ingest a significant amount, then we can have some pretty serious heart problems.
What would be some of the common signs? Is it going to be a GI upset, vomiting, diarrhea, or does it really depend on which plant the pet ingested?
It depends on the plant the animal ingested. And one thing we have to remember, that even plants that are quote-unquote safe, like grass, and, you know, other plants are considered non-toxic. If a dog or cat should eat them, can cause some mild vomiting. Oftentimes, dogs and cats will have upset stomachs, and in order to make themselves throw up, they will actually chew on plant material. And if they can't go outside and get the grass, that might be when they go over and start chewing on the house plant that they've ignored for years. And there are other plants out there. People in the South who have the big cycad palms, they're gorgeous plants, but if your dog gets into those and eats the little berries or chews on the bark or digs up the roots and eats those, can cause severe liver problems. Trying to go through a list here. Bulb plants like tulips, daffodils can cause anything from mild digestive upset to very, very severe vomiting, diarrhea, including some neurological signs. And then the autumn blooming crocus can cause life-threatening problems. It can cause very, very profuse. It's what we call radiomimetic. It actually acts as if you've been irradiated, and it kills the rapidly dividing cells of the body. So we see severe vomiting, diarrhea, bone marrow suppression, that kind of thing.
So how can somebody know that what plants I have outside, or I want to buy a plant, when you look at, you know, the little sticker that comes with a plant and says, oh, this is the kind of watering it needs and the kind of sun that it needs. How can a person know what is safe to put in the yard or what you have out there is safe to have around pets? Is there some type of source you can go to?
Sure. What I would recommend is that they make a list of the plants that they want, and then there are a lot of websites on the internet that are sponsored by universities or organizations that will list you toxic and non-toxic plants. As a matter of fact, our website, the Animal Poison Control website, does indeed have a list of not only toxic plants, but we have a list of plants that are considered non-toxic, so that would be safe to plant around pets, and if they were ingested, they might cause some mild tummy upset, but they're not going to cause a problem. And people can get that on a link off of our main website at www.aspca.org.
Great information. And one thing, just kind of as an aside, I have two cats, and I have a black thumb instead of a green thumb. So I only have silk plants in the house, and I was thinking, this is going to be safe. I have silk plants. It's not going to be a problem. And then some of them are kind of long and kind of stringy.
Right.
And all of a sudden I realized, oh, look, my cat has been chewing it and now has thrown it up. So yes, even silk plants, artificial plants, can still be problematic for cats and dogs.
Right.
As we're getting into the holiday season, a lot of people want to put out candles, put out potpourri. Are there certain seasonal precautions they should take, things that can be toxic for their pets?
Well, certainly we're coming up on Halloween and Thanksgiving and then the December holidays, and the big one for us is, of course, chocolate. And
why is chocolate a problem?
Well, chocolate contains two ingredients, that caffeine and theobromine, that dogs are very sensitive to. I'm sure cats would be too, but cats are usually smarter than eat enough to be a problem. But you know, dogs will get into the chocolate, and it's like, no one can eat just one. They'll eat the entire box of chocolate. So we'll have a 50-pound dog will eat a whole 5-pound box of chocolates, and we'll see serious problems. Dogs are more sensitive to the effects of caffeine and theobromine, both of which cause stimulation of the nervous system and the heart. And if you can think about it, it's like someone taking a massive overdose of caffeine. The heart goes into abnormal rhythms. We can actually even see tremors and seizures. Other things around the holiday time that we see a lot of, as you said, potpourri. Most potpourris, the solid potpourris, aren't going to pose a toxicity hazard very much, but certainly if a dog ate or a cat ate a lot of them, those, especially the ones made of the plant material, they could end up with foreign body problem. Plus, we also want to know where the plants came from. What kind of plants are in that potpourri? Are there toxic plants in there? Because even though they're dried, they still may retain their toxicity. And liquid potpourri is a problem, especially for cats. What we'll have is the cat will walk across the counter, spill the liquid potpourri, walk through it, groom it off itself, and the potpourri can cause very severe ulcers and swelling of the tongue and damage to the digestive tract. And
also, speaking of spilling things and walking, especially cats walking through and grooming themselves,
right.
Pine cleaners. A lot of people don't realize that pine-scented cleaners can cause problems, especially for cats. Why so?
Yeah. Pine cleaners contain pine oil, and pine oil has a lot of phenol in it. And phenol is a product that cats cannot break down in their body very well. And it ultimately can cause very severe liver problems. Now, the good news is that the newer pine products tend to have a much smaller concentration of pine oil than the ones when I was a kid, where they could be up to 25% pine oil, at which point they were very, very potent. So depending on the product, the pine oil product might not be anything more than a mild digestive upset, or other more concentrated professional strength products might be concentrated enough to cause more severe problems, such as liver problems we talked about. Remember, it's the dose makes the poison. Just because it has pine oil in it, if it's really dilute pine oil, not going to be as much of a problem as if it's very concentrated.
And Dr. Sharon, as we're going into the colder months and we're putting antifreeze into the cars and sometimes it spills over or you just have a puddle of it around, why is antifreeze a problem for pets? Why do they need to be so careful?
Well, there are two primary forms of antifreeze out on the market now for cars, car radiators. The first is the old-fashioned, the most common one, and it's composed of ethylene glycol. And ethylene glycol is a product that can cause serious kidney problems, in dogs and cats if they ingest it. And it does not take very much at all.
Why would they ingest it?
Well, it's supposed to have a sweet flavor, which might attract dogs. My gut feeling is with cats is probably it's one of these they walk through a puddle of it and groomed it off themselves. And that doesn't sound like they get much of an exposure, but cats are so exquisitely sensitive to ethylene glycol. It does not take much at all. Less than a quarter teaspoon can kill a cat. And you can conceive of a cat walking through a puddle and getting more than a quarter of a teaspoon on its coat, especially a long-haired cat, and grooming it off itself. But dogs may be attracted to the sweeter scent taste of the antifreeze.
Mm.
And there is a second type of antifreeze that's come on the market, and they call it a safer antifreeze, which it is. It's composed of propylene glycol. And propylene glycol, unlike the ethylene glycol, will not cause the serious kidney damage that we see. And so if pets are an issue, it might not be a bad idea to switch over to those brands of antifreeze that contain propylene glycol.
So the propylene glycol is safe if the kitty walks through it and grooms its paws?
Yeah, and what we see with both ethylene glycol and propylene glycol, act like alcohol is in the body. So if you drink enough of it, you can get drunk. You can get a buzz. You can be a little drunk, and so can dogs and cats. And it's not the drunkenness, though, that kills them. It's primarily the breakdown products of the ethylene glycol that cause the kidney damage. And we do not get that breakdown of the propylene glycol, so we don't see the kidney damage. But it would take even a pretty hefty dose of propylene glycol to actually even give the kitty or the doggy a little buzz there. So, yes, it is much safer. But again, if you got a dog that got into the propylene glycol and chug-a-lugged a lot of it, we could see a drunk doggy.
Speaking of getting buzzes, I had a client that called the other day who was on vacation in San Francisco and very sheepishly called and wanted to know if it was a problem that the dog got into some special cookies. And this going to be problematic? It's like, yes, go see, you know, emergency veterinarian now. So getting into things like marijuana, getting into things like alcohol, I know people think it's kind of fun. Oh, let's get the dog drunk. Why is that a problem again?
Well, again, people don't stop and realize that dogs and cats' body size is so much different than ours. And in addition, dogs and cats tend to be much more sensitive to these products. So something, a little bit of alcohol that might not even give you or me a buzz can cause serious drunkenness and cause even a coma in a dog or cat. They're very, very sensitive to alcohol. As a matter of fact, an alcohol-based flea spray applied too heavily on a cat, the cat can absorb that alcohol through the skin to the degree that it actually can have an alcohol toxicosis just from being oversaturated with an alcohol-based flea spray. That's how sensitive dogs and cats are to these things. Same deal with marijuana. The nice thing about marijuana is that if an animal gets the marijuana and gets prompt veterinary treatment, the prognosis is usually excellent. Most animals make full recoveries.
And veterinarians really don't care what your pet has gotten into. They're not going to report you.
Right.
So if your kitty or your dog gets into your stash, buck up, go in, be maybe upset that they ate your stash, but your veterinarian is not going to cause you any legal problems. We just want to take care of your pets.
Right. The more potent illicit drugs, such as cocaine or amphetamines, are extremely dangerous, again, because of the high sensitivity of these species to them.
What many people don't realize, and holidays coming in particular, and many times we're doing much more cooking, and especially after we had the recall of pet food earlier in the year, many people are trying to make food for their pets, or their pets just happen to get into a tray of food. What foods are out there that pets should not get?
The types of foods we don't want pets to get. Dogs and cats, first and foremost, which might surprise a lot of people, grapes and raisins. And I know there are people out there saying, I feed my dog grapes all the time. And we understand that, but we also understand that there are situations where dogs and cats have eaten grapes or raisins and have ended up with fatal kidney failure. And because we can't tell you, is this exposure going to be one that causes serious problems, we just generally recommend that grapes and raisins be kept away from pets. Another food, we've already talked about chocolate, but another food is, it's not food, it's a beverage, but coffee. Coffee contains a lot of caffeine, and we just talked about how sensitive dogs and cats are to caffeine.
How about garlic? I know people want to use garlic for flea control, which it doesn't work, but why is garlic a problem?
Well, onions and garlic contain a compound that in the digestive tract of dogs and cats is converted into another compound that actually can damage the red blood cells and cause a very severe anemia. And while, you know, if you give your dog a tablespoonful of beef stew and there's one little sliver of onion in there, that's not really going to be enough to be a problem. Large amounts of onion and garlic can certainly be a problem. And any dose, any amount of onion and garlic is going to produce that compound and cause some damage to the red blood cells. It's just that you have to eat enough of it to damage enough red blood cells until you see a problem. If you're chronically giving your cat, say, a product that has onion powder in it, and even though the onion powder is there in very small amounts, over time your cat can develop an anemia from it. So it's best not to give it, and as you say, it really doesn't work for the fleas anyway.
And how about raw yeast dough?
Raw yeast
dough. I've heard of dogs getting into, you know, you making this bread for holidays, and then poof, it's gone, and your dog ate it.
We have two issues with that. First, the stomach makes a beautiful vat for those yeast to thrive, and you know how you put the bread out to rise. Well, that bread rises in the stomach, and it can distend the stomach to the point where we can have some compromise to the respiratory tract because the stomach's so big they're having trouble breathing, and also it can cause some damage to the walls of the stomach due to the blanching out of the blood due to the pressure. But more importantly, as those yeast are replicating, they're actually producing alcohol. And what we end up with yeast dough ingestions are dogs with severe alcohol toxicosis. And again, I blame it on dogs because it's the most common call we get. But what we have is a drunk dog with a distended abdomen that's having difficulty breathing, and that's never a fun thing to deal with.
Oh, definitely not, especially at the holiday season or at any time. Well, we've been speaking with Dr. Sharon Gwaltney-Brent, Vice President of the ASPCA Animal Poison Control Center in Urbana, Illinois. Dr. Brent, is there some place where people, if they need some more information again, where can they go? If they have concerns about a poisoning, or where can they go?
Well, they can go to our website. We have a nice website. It has pages on it on, you know, how to poison-proof your home. We have a little game you can play on there. It's got the little dog Cooper, and you can go through the house and you can identify the toxic things and clean them up and clean up your home. It's a little interactive game.
Great idea for kids to do it.
Yeah, it would be fun for the kids to do, and it would be very educational. We also have in there a list of, on our website, we have poisonous plant lists and also a non-poisonous plant list. Give you an idea of the types of plants you can use in your house. We also have an Ask ASPCA area where if you have a specific toxicology question, you can email that into us and we will answer it. But you might want to look through the archives first because many, many questions have been submitted and there are tons of answers, and you can search the archives and see if your question already has been answered there. So our website has a wealth of information on animal poisoning.
And the web address again?
It's www.aspca.org. And then on the left, you take the link to the Animal Poison Control Center.
And I think people have a question about poisoning. They saw their pet swallow something. Call your local emergency clinic. Call the ASPCA. There is a fee associated with it. But as you said, it is manned 24/7 by board-certified veterinary toxicologists that know animals and know the toxic principles of all this. I really appreciate you being with us today. Hopefully we've saved many an animal from getting into trouble. If you have any questions regarding your pet's health, remember the best person to ask is always going to be your primary care veterinarian. If you want to email me and you have some questions, please feel free to do so at Bernadine@PetLifeRadio.com. I promise to answer your questions either during a future telecast or by personal email. My name is Dr. Bernadine Cruz, and you've been listening to PetLifeRadio.com and The Pet Doctor. The goal of this program is to entertain, educate, and increase the pleasure you and your pet share in life. And why is this important to me? Because it's your pet. Health matters. Thanks for listening.
Pets can be a wonderful addition to your life. Because they're a member of the family, keeping them healthy and happy is important. Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor with veterinary media consultant and veterinarian Dr. Bernadine Cruz. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile, or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets. On demand every week, only on PetLifeRadio.com.